Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. And sitting across from me in a completely different location than he was last time, we're in Studio C1 or X4 or something, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there! That's right, the Studio A, the old bird, the old lady. she's undergoing a bit of a renovation, a complete teardown and reconstruction phase, and is going to be bigger and badder than ever once the 6 week period is up. We are recording this on week one of that 6 week period. Of course, this will publish much later. So, or maybe not much later, but later. And we'll be well on our way to returning to our studio space. But in the meantime, we are in an empty office.
And I heard there would be turbo lasers on the new one.
I hope ion lasers, because those end up completely disabling a ship without actually causing a damage.
Well, you know, we do what we can fit in the budget.
We are currently in a tiny, unused office that is getting increasingly warm as we go. So why don't we just jump right into this week's topic, which happens to be a highly requested topic. In fact, let me run through this really quickly. We have received requests from listeners such as Robert, Art, Karen, Josh, David, Joe, Patrick, Steve, and our good friend Humble Floyd. The trucker.
Hey.
This topic is ham radio or amateur radio. Mm-hmm. This what we got a lot of requests for this after we did CB radio quite a while ago. And, you know, we have a lot of different topics on our list that we go through. And this was just one that's been there for a while. And Chris said, you know what? We really need to tackle this. And I agreed.
All right. So, it seems like it's all in fun, you know, and
mostly.
You know what? I was getting to that.
I'm sorry.
No, it seems like it's all in good fun. I mean, as a portion of the radio spectrum dedicated to people getting on there and meeting people from all over the world, a spectrum that allows you to talk and the signals carry for a long distance.
Yeah, depending on which frequency you're in, yes. Yeah.
But it's as Jonathan pointed out, it's not necessarily all for fun here in the United States. Part of the reason that the Federal Communications Commission grants these licenses is so that people can use these frequencies to broadcast emergency messages in the event of something going horribly, horribly wrong.
Right. You know, normal communication methods may be interrupted, but often you can find someone with a radio transceiver who is able to continue to communicate with the outside world or possibly with people just across town to try and coordinate efforts in case of need for like a emergency rescue or rerouting traffic, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there are several ways that amateur radio differs from citizens band radio or CB radio.
That's true.
And one was one that Chris mentioned just now, which were licenses.
Yes.
You must have a license in order to operate within the amateur radio frequencies. And there are many of the frequencies. They're in bands, mm-hmm. and they are throughout the radio frequency spectrum. And it's different from country to country. Not every country uses the exact same bands. They don't group everything together in the same bands that we do in the United States.
Which is a good thing in a way because it keeps people from talking over one another.
Yeah, the interference is cut down a little bit. And however, that does mean that on certain frequencies, you theoretically should be unable to contact people in countries that are working on a different frequency. They shouldn't mm-hmm. be on that one. And the whole radio spectrum is pretty wide. You know, it's not a tiny little thing. It's I actually downloaded I downloaded a thing here about the radio spectrum, and yeah, he's saying wow because it's pretty huge. In fact, at 50%, I can't even read it because it's shrunk everything down. But yeah,
Jonathan's going to hold this his computer up to the microphone so that you all can hear what
everyone,
he's seeing.
Everyone, take a look. Everyone. Don't crowd. Uh-huh. From about 9 kilohertz to, let's see, what does it go up to? All the way to, scroll down and to the right, 300 gigahertz. 9 kilohertz mm-hmm. to 300 gigahertz. That's the full spectrum there. And large sections, large chunks of that spectrum are dedicated to specific services or like emergency services have certain sections allocated to them and no mm-hmm. one else is allowed to broadcast in those. Television, AM radio, FM radio, these kind of things have dedicated spectrums, mm-hmm. right? And then outside of that, you have a few spectrums that are set aside specifically for amateur radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned the licenses. It's interesting. You can only access certain bands depending on what your license is. You can't, you know, just because you get a license to work in amateur radio, at least in the United States.
Right.
If you get a license to work amateur radio, that does not automatically mean that you can access the entire radio frequency set aside for amateur radio. There are three different levels of licenses in the United States. There's the technician class license, which is the base license.
Yeah.
And the way you get that is you have to answer a 35 question multiple choice examination. You have to pass this examination, and the examination focuses on things like the operating practices, regulations, electronics theory, like what, you know, like our podcast that we covered, basic electronics theory.
Yeah.
You have to have a good grounding in that in order to be an amateur radio. I didn't mean it that way. All right. Well, it's so warm in here. I almost let loose with an actual curse word.
That's Josh's job.
Yeah. And they don't beep him. Have you noticed? I get beeped for saying taking the piss out of, but he doesn't. Anyway, sorry for the beep. Hey, Liz, how you doing? So anyway, the exam covers the regulations, operating practices, electronics theory, that kind of stuff. Also, information on VHF and UHF signals, which are talking about, you know, ultra high frequency and very high frequency radio signals.
Yeah.
Now, those high frequency radio signals also happen to be the ones that don't travel that far, comparatively speaking.
Right.
You can use those to communicate with someone who's in the same town that you are in. But here's the thing about radio frequencies. It's kind of interesting. when you talk about, you have to keep in mind there are two different measurements that are going when you're talking about radio frequencies.
Okay.
The measurement in hertz, which is the number of waves per second,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the length of the wave, which is inversely proportional. You know, the shorter the wave, the more you're going to get going through in a second.
Right.
Because they're all traveling at the same speed.
You know, I always have a problem with wavelength and amplitude. So
all right. So
I'm,
all right. So radio travels, or we're talking about the speed of light here, essentially, right?
Okay.
Electromagnetic radiation. We're mm-hmm. talking about
electromagnetic radiation.
We're talking, everything's moving at the same speed. If you have a really long wavelength, you're going to get fewer repetitions within a second than if you have a very short wavelength because they're both traveling at the same speed.
Okay.
All right. So these high frequency radio waves happen to be very, very short. And so they don't travel that far. And the reason they don't travel that far is because the long waves have the benefit of being reflected by the ionosphere.
Aha.
Now, the ionosphere is way the heck up there. But it tends to – that's a technical term.
Yeah, it is.
That's stuff from the science lab. That's why I'm not going that far into detail.
Okay.
But the ionosphere can reflect long radio waves. And depending on the time of day, it can reflect certain wavelengths better than others. It does change throughout the day and the night. And also other radio other electromagnetic interference can affect it as well. Things like the aurora borealis.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually electromagnetic phenomenon there. It's not just pretty lights. So that can also reflect radio waves. Well, if you're using really long radio waves that and they bounce off the ionosphere, you can actually transmit messages all the way across the world. So you and I could use a ham radio operating on these very long radio frequencies to talk to people in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
However, we would have to have a higher class license than just the basic because the technician class license does not give you access to those radio waves.
Right.
So the next level up would be the general class license. Now that gives you a much larger range of frequencies that you can use, including the really big ones. So you can start talking to people who are on the other side of the world. And you have to pass another 35 question examination, mm-hmm. and it gets a little more specific. It's a little more advanced. So you have to have a better understanding of electronic theory mm-hmm. as opposed to a grounding, as well as operating procedures and all that kind of stuff. And then the third and final level in the United States is the amateur extra class license. And the reason you would want this is because in certain bands, radio traffic's pretty heavy
mm-hmm.
because that's where everyone's operating. So if you wanted to get the amateur extra class license, you would have access to the most elite bands of frequencies where you could, there's not as much traffic. You're more likely to be able to, get your messages through, and you can even use it for experiments like things like, earth to moon to earth transmissions. Where you're actually bouncing, you know, you're aiming your radio signals up at the moon to bounce off and come back down.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. And that is different than the other two. Instead of having to answer a 35 multiple choice question, you have to answer a 50 multiple choice question examination and pass that. And there's something that's interesting recently about all three of the examinations that has changed just over the last few years.
Oh, yes.
Yes. There's one thing you no longer need to know in order to become an amateur radio specialist or a user, really. Specialist is the wrong term entirely, but an amateur radio operator.
Okay.
You know what that is, right?
I do indeed know what that is.
Hit me with it, baby.
Morse code.
Yes. You no longer need to know Morse code in order to become an amateur radio operator, a licensed amateur radio operator. And now it used to be that was one of the requirements. You mm-hmm. had to learn Morse code. Morse code was one of the most popular way of transmitting information via ham radio for many years. And the reason for that is that at certain signals, the quality of the radio transmission is fairly low. So it's hard to transmit information like voice info,
mm-hmm.
At least on the older radios, the lower powered radios, and under certain, like I said, certain radio frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to try and transmit voice over those signals, it would just kind of come in staticky and unintelligible. But you use something like a series of dots and dashes, beeps.
Right.
Those would go and transmit much more effectively. And so that was, you know, and it was also kind of a carryover from the telegraph days.
Yes.
So you went from telegraph to radio, and it just made sense because the fidelity wasn't there for voice yet. And it kind of stuck for a long time. It's still mm-hmm. one of the more popular methods of transmitting data over ham radio, but it's not the top one anymore. Voice has taken over.
Right. Now, ham radio, you may wonder where the term came from. It actually comes from telegraph.
Yeah.
Because there was a book by G.M. Dodge. That's just realized how funny that is. called the Telegraph Instructor. And in it, the author identifies a ham as someone who's a really bad telegraph operator. And in the days when everybody was sharing a frequency, some people would come in more intensely than others, and they would be able to talk over everyone else because they had a stronger signal. Well, those people were identified as hams because they were basically stepping all over everyone else's conversations. And the type of people who were taking that as a badge of honor, and not that they were taking their behavior as a badge of honor, but they thought they sort of basically latched onto the term and said, yeah, you know, we're amateurs, we're, you know, DIY radio operators, we're gonna, you know, this is what we're calling ourselves. And it basically doesn't have that meaning now, but it did at one time.
Yeah, it sounds like it was actually pretty similar to the theatrical use of the word ham.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, that would be someone who steps all over everybody else in an attempt to get all the attention. I could think of someone on this podcast who fits that description. Boy, are my ears burning for some reason. And you know, I mentioned earlier about the really long radio waves bouncing off the ionosphere.
Yes.
I meant to mention this too. I'm sorry that I didn't, but that the shorter waves, they are either absorbed or they actually pass through the ionosphere and go out into space. So that's the thing, is these radio waves aren't, it's not that they, you know, peter out.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case. It's not that's why they're not getting to the other side of the world. It's because instead of bouncing around the atmosphere and back down to the earth, they actually pass through the atmosphere and keep on going. So people who are in that first class of amateur radio operators
mm-hmm.
are technically sending signals out into the ether toward aliens who will eventually come and either ask us where all the cool ham operators are, or they will eat us.
I'm thinking the latter.
Me too.
So, speaking of, never mind.
Wow. I don't know where you were going.
No, I'm not sure either.
All right.
So one of the really cool things about this is the fact that it is a very DIY sort of hobby. I mean, you can, you know, take your license test, get your license, go ahead and buy a radio, or you can build one yourself.
Yeah, this is another way that this is different from CB radios.
Yeah.
That, you know, with CB radios, you can't build your own Citizens Band radio.
Nope.
You have to purchase a licensed one.
Mm-hmm.
Although we did get that one email about how you can kind of get around that. But in general, you're supposed to buy a licensed radio for CB radio as opposed
to the rules say.
Now, that's different for amateur radios.
Yeah.
Amateur radio operators can take up the hobby of building their own radios
mm-hmm.
and then using them to transmit and receive information. And
which I guess explains why you need the electronics theory in the test.
Yes, and they can be much more powerful than mm-hmm. CB radios could. I think CB radios were limited to some crazy thing like 5 watts,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
amateur radio is 1500.
Wow.
So
that's pretty significant.
Yeah, pretty big difference there. And now amateur radios come in all shapes and sizes. You can find some that are little handheld devices that you might tune to a repeater so mm-hmm. that you send your signal to the repeater, and the repeater receives signals through one frequency and transmits them through another. And then essentially it kind of boosts your signal.
Yeah.
Or you could have an amateur radio that's huge. I remember reading one thing saying that it could take up half an attic, where you've got this enormous amateur radio station
mm-hmm.
In order to transmit and receive signals. And every single amateur radio operator gets a call sign. And unlike CB radio, where you can pick your handle, these are call signs that are assigned to you. And it all depends on where you live, what country you're in, you know, how each country has its own method of assigning these call signs. In the United States, the call sign has a prefix and a suffix. The prefix is all based upon where you live. It's usually a letter and then a number or a couple of letters in the number. And some states get multiple call signs. I assume that means that, those are just have more amateur radio operators in them.
It would make sense.
So can you guess which two states have the, have multiple call sign prefixes?
Which two?
There are two states in the union that have multiple, call sign prefixes.
If I had to guess, I would think California and Texas.
You are so wrong.
Wow. Really?
Alaska and Hawaii.
Oh, well, you know, when you say that, it makes sense.
Now you think, yeah.
I was just thinking that, large geographical areas.
But these are the two that are the most isolated from the rest of the nation.
True.
So there you go. So Alaska's call sign prefixes are AL – actually, there's quite a few. But it's AL0 through 7, KL0 through 7, NL0 through 7, WL0 through 7. And Hawaii's are AH6 through 7, KH6 through 7, NH6 through 7, and WH6 through 7.
Wow.
Yep.
Good to know.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And so, if you hear the beginning of a call sign, you know where they are operating out of. And here's another interesting thing is that most countries allow amateur radio operators to operate within their borders, even if they're not from that country. So let's say that you get your license in one country and you travel to another. Now, in some countries, they'll let you go ahead and operate, you know, as if you held a license there. Others may require you to actually pass an examination, a local examination, before you're allowed to use your radio skills. But what do you do about your call sign? Because your call sign identifies where you are, right? We just talked about that.
Well, you said where we're from.
Well, it's not just where you're from. It's where you're transmitting from. Okay. So what you have to do is you have an addendum to your call sign. You keep your regular call sign, and then you add a little slash, and then you give the prefix for the area that you are currently in, and that indicates that you are, you know, you're from this one region, but you're actually broadcasting from another region for the time being while you are in transit.
That's good to know, because another thing that I thought was pretty cool about ham radio, as I was doing my research, and I had always wondered, seeing the license plates of cars that had their ham radio call sign listed on the license plate, like they do in some places, which was, you know, these were not – just because there are some radios that take up half of an attic doesn't mean that all ham radios are like that.
No, some are very portable.
Yes, and there are some people who use them in cars. So I would assume that if you're doing – if you're traveling with your radio, you're going to have to make that, you know, that extension every time.
You would have
time.
To change that whenever you would move into a new region. Now, most of the regions are pretty big. Actually, I can think of two reasons why Alaska and Hawaii would have those multiples. One, Hawaii is made up of a series of islands.
True.
So probably each island has its own. But Alaska is enormous.
Yes, it is.
So that would also make sense. So that it may not even be the remote nature of these two states, but also just the fact that one is not a single landmass and the other one is a frickin' huge landmass. But at any rate,
I didn't understand that extension you have on there. It's the one for the inside of a bear. I've been eaten.
Yeah, right.
I think I'm still in Alaska.
Yeah, might be in Canada by now. Who knows? The way you would say it is you would give your normal call sign and then you would say portable, which indicates that you are on the move, and then you would give the prefix for whatever region you were in.
Okay.
And like I said, most of these call signs cover a fairly large area. So it's not like if you went from one state to another, you would necessarily have to change. You might have to go two or three states before you are in a new call sign area.
Right, right.
And this is the kind of stuff you need to know before you take your exam. And there are, it's funny, there are actually a lot of ham radio operators are really, really passionate about this hobby. That's not the funny part. I mean, it's that makes sense. But yeah, they're very passionate about it, and they're very eager to share their knowledge. And so if you run into an amateur radio operator or ham radio operator and they are willing to impart that knowledge to you, the common term for them is, do you happen to know this?
No, I don't know this one.
Elmers.
I saw that and had wondered.
I have no idea. Someone's going to write in and explain to us why they are called that. I don't know.
That's interesting, though.
Yeah. I was like, huh. I bet there's a reason for that. I'm sure there's a story behind it, but I couldn't find it while I was looking. Of course, I was looking at like all the technical specs. And then, so by the time I reached that point, I was saying, oh, too late. Got to go around the horn.
Now, yeah, if you're wondering, there are several organizations. I mean, there is the International Amateur Radio Union, which is a very large organization. And then, here in the United States, the American Relay Radio League can also, clue you in, if you're looking for more information about doing this. And it is a fairly affordable hobby as far as electronics go. You know, even, having to buy the equipment, it can start at under $200, in the United States. So that's not terribly expensive, for a, you know, sort of out of the way, you know, not on the store shelves at Walmart sort of piece of equipment. So that's pretty cool. It's not a terrible, barrier to entry.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's kind of got an old school appeal to it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, unfortunately, I would say the rise of the World Wide Web has taken a lot of the appeal of ham radio out for anyone other than radio enthusiasts, because the web has made it very easy to make contact with people on the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before, you know, amateur radio was one of the few ways you could actually have a conversation with someone mm-hmm. who was countries away without spending any extra money on the actual transmission.
Yeah.
You didn't have any long distance phone charges or anything like that. You didn't have to send mail and wait forever for it to come back. You could have a real time conversation with someone, and it didn't cost you any more than what you had spent on your examination and the equipment you were using.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. But, the web has made things so much easier that that people who are still interested in radio, of course, they haven't lost any passion for the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's probably harder to get people into it.
Well, on the other hand, though, if it's something that you know, that it's this way with just about any hobby that I've encountered, you know, there are always people who really enjoy the exclusivity of it.
Right.
And I'm sure for those people who like the idea that they're doing something that few other people are doing,
well,
you know, just enough to have a conversation with, that's probably going to be an appeal to some people that dedicated to, you know, keep the activity alive and keep interest up in it.
And it's definitely a skill set. I mean, it's you know, building a radio requires a lot of skill, and operating Morse code and understanding Morse code requires skill. And you know, they have competitions. There are ham radio competitions that are pretty interesting, where within a certain given amount of time, you have to collect as many call signs as you possibly can, verified that you have collected these call signs. And usually it's an international thing where you're mm-hmm. trying to collect call signs from across the world.
Yeah, that's the DX competition.
Yeah. And so you have to try and collect as many as you can. And you know, they have to be verifiable. You know, essentially, mm-hmm. you're going to have to appear in someone else's book to show that, yes, you did actually make – you can't just write call signs down
right.
at random. And we should also mention – I'm surprised we've gone this long without mentioning it. We've talked about Morse code and we've talked about voice. Those are mm-hmm. not the only two methods of communication you can send through amateur radio.
That's true.
There's
That's
more.
True. Yeah.
Like television.
That's true.
You can actually use some of the spectrum to send amateur TV to people. Now, granted, these don't tend to travel that far, so you tend to display it to people who are in the area, but it's like creating your own public access.
Yep, and there's a packet and radio teletype.
Right, so packet information would be like the internet.
I mean,
this we can thank Khan for this, about the Khan!
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
It's very cold in radio. Khan and Surf, you know?
Yes.
the fathers of the internet, or people who worked on ARPANET and then continued to work as ARPANET, sort of made way for the internet. One of the networks that got pulled into the internet was the radio network.
Mm-hmm.
And once you were able to send packets, data packets through radio frequencies, that became an actual part of the internet. So when you think internet, I mean, I tend to think of the internet as computers and smartphones now, mm-hmm. things like that.
Yes.
Devices that send data like that in that method. But really, there's a radio element to it as well. And mm-hmm. and amateur radio operators can use packets and send data through the radio. And the radio teletype that you mentioned
mm-hmm.
used to have really specific equipment to use that. You know, you had to have a big teletype machine.
Right. Like the ones you used to see in the newsroom.
Yeah, like the one that's featured in the Boomtown Rats song, I Don't Like Mondays.
Yes.
Anyway, so
wow. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it's the very first line. It's kept so clean and it types to a waiting world. Yeah, you used to have these big machines. Now you can use software on the computer and have your computer hooked up to a transceiver, and the computer acts as the teletype machine, mm-hmm. and you can receive and send messages using radio teletype. And then there's the PSK
mm-hmm.
delivery as well. So we had to mention that, because otherwise someone would write in and say, hey, you know, you talked about voice and you talked about Morse code, but there's more to it than that. And there is.
And people are using light.
Yes, I saw that. LEDs.
Yes, LED communications, essentially to deliver the same information. And it, you know, as long as you have line of sight, the LED is able to, transmit the signal that way rather than, the traditional way.
So yeah, I'm like, how do you call that radio still?
Yeah, I know.
That's photonic, man.
Yeah. And I really wanted to get into that more, but we're running out of time.
Yeah, we're running out of time. We're running out of time. And you know what? I read that same article, but I need to read it.
Yeah,
again.
I want to get it before I try to explain it to someone else.
Yeah, because so. That was one of those where I'm like, this is really super cool, and I just barely understand it. Well, I hope that was a good little discussion on ham radio. There's so much more that we can talk about. And like we said, every single nation has its own frequencies and its own licensing procedure. But if you're interested, there are lots of websites out there that can direct you to to resources to become an amateur radio operator.
And you're sure to find an Elmer who's willing to talk to you about it.
Oh, sure.
Who's excited about it to mentor you in that.
So moving on, I wanted to talk very quickly about a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Kevin from Peoria. How are things in Peoria? Peoria today. It's a folk song.
Okay.
He says, hello, I just had a quick comment. Chris had mentioned in your last podcast about microwaves how much he hates microwaving bread, and I completely understand. Here is a tip that my fiance taught me. First, thoroughly wet down a paper towel and then unravel it. Next, wrap your bread, works particularly well with breadsticks, in the wet paper towel. Microwave for 15 to 20 seconds, and then carefully remove and discard the very hot paper towel. Then enjoy the soft, warm bread stuff. It stays soft and warm for much longer than usual this way. I didn't believe her until she did it for me one day, and it worked. Believe me, it has revolutionized my dining experience with leftover breadsticks. Thanks for the great podcast. I especially like the puns. You are welcome, Kevin, and thank your fiance for us for helping us roll in the dough.
Oh, man.
Whackety schmackety do.
I can't believe you just, never mind.
I know.
All right.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap this up. If you want to learn more about ham radio, visit our website. It's howstuffworks.com. We've got blogs. Remember, you can check those out. You'll see those links on the right-hand side, or you can always just go to blogs.howstuffworks.com if you want the direct route. And remember, we no longer do Tech Stuff Live. Tech Stuff Live is on hiatus while we are working on the studio space. We hope to have something special by the time we get it back up and running. We're thinking up ideas right now. If you have any specific ideas you think would be great, email us, techstuff@howstuffworks.com, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.